I found the old 8mm camera buried in the back corner of Murphy's Thrift, under a pile of moldy magazines. The price tag read $20. It had a film reel was tucked inside it with a piece of masking tape across it. "Do not watch," it read. As an aspiring filmmaker, I couldn't resist the temptation of forbidden footage. The old guy at the register barely looked up when I bought it. Back in my apartment, I set up my small darkroom. I'd been developing film since high school, so the process was routine. Load the reel, mix the chemicals, and wait for the magic to unfold. When it was ready, I projected the footage on my bedroom wall. Initially, it was innocent stuff, some Halloween night back in the early 90s, based on the quality and the costumes. A father was filming his two kids dressed as a vampire and a witch, probably 8 and 10 years old. The mother was handing out candy to trick-or-treaters at the front door. But after the last trick-or-treater left, something shifted. The kids disappeared from the frame, while the mother closed the door and locked it with 3 different deadbolts. "Are we ready?" the father hooted.
"Yeah!"
the children cheered.
"I got the rope like you taught me, Daddy."
The boy jumped enthusiastically. As the camera followed them down into a basement, the image got grainier. I could still make out a workbench, some tools hanging on the wall, and in the corner, a woman. She was bound to a chair, gagged. Her eyes were wide with terror, and cheeks were wet with tears. "Now remember what we practiced," the father said, still filming. The camera shook slightly, like he was excited. "Mommy will hold Aunt Sarah still while you and your sister take turns, okay?" Turns? I was horrified. I wanted to turn it off, but I was frozen. The mother walked into frame, smiling like she was about to serve dinner. She placed her hands gently on the woman's shoulders while the kids came closer, carrying something I couldn't quite make out. The woman's muffled screams grew louder as the footage became more and more chaotic. The camera shook violently. Still, I caught flashes of open wounds and blood and the sound of the lady choking on pure terror. Then, a sound of a chainsaw rumbled and everything cut to black. I sat frozen in my dark apartment, heart pounding, staring at the blank wall. I just watched a real snuff film. This family had tortured, maybe even killed that woman, and they filmed it like it was nothing. I was still trying to process what I'd seen when I got a call from an unknown number.
"Is this Leo?"
Yeah.
"Hey, this is Murphy from the thrift store. Listen, that camera you bought wasn't supposed to be sold. The owner came back looking for it. Said his father's belongings got mixed up by accident."
My blood went cold. What did you tell him?
"Had to give him your address and number from the receipt. He's on the way to pick it up from you."
The line went dead. I stared at my phone as panic crawled in my chest. Before I could even blink, my doorbell rang. I looked through the peephole and saw a man in his early 40s of average height, with thinning hair, restlessly tapping his toes. He was the kind of guy you'd pass without noticing. But when he looked up at the door, I nearly whimpered. Those were the same eyes from the film, older now, but with the same cold intensity I'd seen in the footage. He was the little boy from that footage.
"Leo?"
he called through the door.
"I can hear you. I'm David Hutchinson. I think you have something that belongs to my family."
My hands shook as I backed away from the door.
I don't know what you're talking about. My father's old 8mm camera from the thrift. I already threw it away."
I lied. There was a long pause.
"And what about the film?"
My heart stopped. He let out a low chuckle.
"You watched it, didn't you?"
Then there was full-blown laughter along with unmistakable metallic scraping against the door. He was working on the lock.
"What do you want?"
I asked, already dialing 911 with shaking fingers.
"The film, obviously." And to make sure you understand the importance of keeping family secrets. The lock clicked open. David stepped inside, closing the door behind him. The call had connected. I could hear the operator's voice, but I couldn't state my emergency. My wide eyes were pinned on the filleting knife in his hand. "You know, Dad's been dying for months," he said, looking around my apartment. "But when I told him someone has our home movies, he perked right up."
"The police
won't find anything. We learned a long time ago how to clean up properly and leave before they arrive."
He took a step closer. I bolted toward the fire escape, but David was faster than he looked. He grabbed my shoulder, spinning me around. The knife flashed toward my face. I ducked, throwing my entire weight into his midsection. We both crashed into my coffee table. David's head hit the corner with a sickening crack, and for a moment he was stunned. I didn't wait to see if I'd killed him. I grabbed the film reel and ran for the door, taking the stairs three at a time. The cops arrived 20 minutes later, having traced my number. They found David lying unconscious in his own pool of blood. The knife was still in his hand. He woke up 2 days later, but he never talked, just kept smiling whenever they questioned him. The film was enough evidence to reopen several cold cases from the 90s. He succumbed to his injury in the county lockup some months later. I didn't follow up on his case or what happened to that woman because I had enough traumas already. I don't film anything anymore. Can't even look at a camera without seeing that woman's terrified eyes. When I saw that mirror at Henderson's Thrift, this antique thing with a brass frame and mad detailing, all for 15 bucks, I didn't think twice.
"Now, remember, sweetie, no returns," the store owner warned with this tight smile.
I nodded and immediately hit up Lucy to help me carry it. It took us all afternoon to get it mounted right, but once we did, it totally lit up my crusty dorm room. The glass was so clean it made the otherwise shitty lighting look like a movie set. That night, I went to bed feeling smug about bagging the deal, only to be jolted awake hours later to this bone-deep cold that had me shivering like a dry leaf. The room wasn't only icy, but also eerily quiet, as if someone had sucked all the sound out, except for this faint scraping noise that seemed to echo from a distance. I strained my ear to listen intently. It felt like someone was dragging their fingernails against glass. I should have stayed in bed, should have pulled the covers over my head and waited for it to pass. But this wild, irresistible urge was eating me up. I had to check on the mirror. I slid out of bed and started walking. The scraping got louder with each step, but when I was maybe 3 feet away, it stopped altogether. I leaned in to find my reflection staring back at me. Even in a daze, I could feel that something about it was wrong. Instead of the amber of my eyes, the one staring back seemed dark, sunken, and hollow. The nose was crooked, and the skin was pale as paper. It took me a second to realize that it wasn't my eyes, nose, or face. I spun around, and she was right there, just inches away, donning a torn nightgown. Blood was staining the fabric dark, while her hair hung in greasy strings, framing this carved-in smile that was way too wide for her face. She tilted her head and grinned at me. I screamed and stumbled, squeezing my eyes shut so tight I saw stars. My heart hammered against my ribs as I waited for something, anything, to happen. Minutes passed. When I reopened my eyes, I was alone. I hurriedly grabbed my phone's flashlight and swept it around the room, trembling. But it was just me and the shadows dancing in the weak LED glow.
"It's stress eating you up,"
I whispered to myself. Suddenly, my door handle started rattling. It was no gentle knocking. The shaking was violent, like someone was trying to rip it off the hinges. The sound echoed through my room like gunfire.
"Who's there?"
I called out. No one answered.
"Lucy?"
I crept to the peephole, grabbing my softball bat along the way. The hallway was empty, just those flickering fluorescent lights that never worked right. The rattling stopped the second I looked. I heaved a sigh and backed away from the door, but before I could figure anything out, my closet exploded into motion. The whole thing shook like an earthquake was trapped inside. The hangers clung in a way that made my teeth ache. I yanked it open, ready to swing the bat, but there was nothing except my clothes and other knickknacks.
Get it together, Jenna.
I muttered as I climbed back into bed, pulling my covers up. I kept gaslighting myself that it was my brain cooking up, just my imagination, probably too much caffeine and stress. I had barely closed my eyes when the knocks echoed from directly underneath my mattress. Tap, tap, tap. My blood turned to ice. I lay there frozen, listening to my heartbeat thunder in my ears. Part of me knew I shouldn't look. Every horror movie ever made had taught me that much. But I couldn't just lie there anymore. I rolled to the edge and peered over. She was crouched under my bed, looking up at me with that impossible smile. Her face was gray, almost corpse-like, and her eyes were black holes that seemed to absorb the light.
Jenna, come join me.
She giggled, reaching up. My eyes zoomed in on her hands. Her fingers were severed at the knuckles. They were just bloody stumps with bone showing through. Dark blood dripped steadily onto my floor, pooling in spots that seemed to swallow the light completely.
Come with me. We'll make him pay.
She hissed, stretching those mutilated stumps toward my face. I bolted from that room like my ass was on fire, and I pounded on Lucy's door until she opened it.
Jenna? What happened? The mirror. There's something in the mirror.
I gasped, pushing her in and locking the door. Lucy listened as I told her whatever I'd seen. She wanted to check my room, but I wouldn't let her go back there. Not until morning. I spent the night on her couch, barely sleeping. When the sun came up, Lucy announced,
"We're going back to that thrift store."
The owner of Henderson's Thrift looked like he'd aged decades overnight. When Lucy slammed my receipt down and demanded he take the mirror back, his face went paper white.
"Told you, no returns," he said quietly.
"Bullshit,"
Lucy snapped.
"You know something about it you didn't tell my friend?"
It took Lucy threatening to call the cops before he finally cracked.
"I bought it from a police auction,"
he whispered, glancing around the empty store.
"It was of a woman named Rebecca. She was murdered. Her body was found in front of that mirror."
My stomach dropped.
"Murdered? How?"
"Her husband was strung out, needed cash for his next fix. When she said no, he came at her with a kitchen knife, chased her through the house, and stabbed her over and over."
He paused, staring at my hands.
"She tried to grab the blade, got her finger sliced clean off, but he cornered her in the bedroom eventually."
Lucy grabbed my arm, but I barely felt it. We walked out of that store, but I never went back to my dorm room. Had maintenance pack up my stuff and get rid of that mirror while I waited in the lobby like a coward. It's been months, and I'm still trying to put it behind me. I knew I should have trusted my gut the second I walked in, but I was 25, flat broke, and clinging to the hope of finding something decent for my friend's gallery opening, and the thrift store felt like my last shot. The place looked like it hadn't been updated since the 80s. The fluorescent lights buzzed and flickered overhead, casting everything in this sickly yellow glow that made my skin look corpse pale. The store was practically empty, except for the cashier, a couple of other customers shuffling around, and this shady-looking guy. He was maybe 40, with greasy hair hanging in strings around his face and clothes that looked like he'd been wearing them for weeks. He was standing in the middle of the woman's lingerie section. Didn't seem like he was shopping, though.
I tried to ignore him as I walked past and focused on the vintage dresses instead, but I couldn't shake off the weird vibes. Every time I glanced up, he was closer. He wasn't walking toward me exactly, but somewhat drifting. When I moved to the blazer section, I caught him ducking behind a rack of coats. My hands started shaking as I pretended to examine a jacket, using the reflection in a nearby mirror to keep track of him. He was crouched down, partially hidden, but I could see his eyes, closely following every one of my movements. It would have been easiest to bolt without ever looking back, but instead, I convinced myself I was being unnecessarily paranoid and moved toward the back of the store where they kept the shoes. That's when I saw the phone. He was holding it at waist level, and the camera was angled toward me. I snapped, marching over to him.
What do you think you're doing?
He looked up at me with these watery blue eyes and shrugged.
Just looking around. Nice view, don't you think?
The childishness in his voice made my skin crawl.
You're recording me. I saw your phone.
Don't know what you mean.
But he was beaming ear to ear, like he was enjoying the attention. His teeth were stained yellow, and there was something dark stuck between the front ones. Fortunately, the commotion had caught the cashier's attention, who appeared already leery of the weirdo. Any problem here? Pointing an accusing finger, I hissed.
He's been following me around and filming me.
The guy looked at him with disgust. Leave before I call the cops. Suddenly, that weirdo's whole face flipped. He had the audacity to look hurt, like we were being so unfair to him. His childlike expression vanished entirely, and I could see raw rage dancing in his eyes. He started backing toward the door, but his stare locked on mine. Before stepping out the exit, he loudly said,
I just wanted to see who you really are. Drop the act, you know?
Security!
I'm leaving, all right? I'm out.
He stormed off, muttering under his breath. I lingered in the store for a while, hoping the matter's resolved. By the time I stepped outside, the sun was low, casting long shadows between the few cars still left in the lot. I got to my car and was about to get in when I heard the faint footsteps behind me.
You can't hide forever. I'll find you. Always.
He was standing there, still wearing that awful grin. My hands were shaking so hard I almost dropped my keys. He looked like he was about to sprint straight at me. But without wasting a second more, I dove into my car. I slammed the door shut and started jamming the lock button over and over until my thumb went numb. The guy brought his face closer to the window. His breath fogged the glass, and I could see every detail of his feature up close. The broken capillaries in his nose, the thin scar running from his left ear to his jaw, and the way his pupils quenched into tiny black dots scaring the hell out of me.
Pretty, pretty car for a very pretty girl. Step out.
I didn't. He looked pissed. He straightened up and walked around to the front. I watched in horror as he grabbed my windshield wipers and yanked them off, tossing them aside like twigs. The sound of metal scraping against metal made me numb. He repeatedly asked me to step out while vandalizing my car. He broke the headlights, dragged keys across my hood in long, deliberate strokes. He was humming while he did it, some tune I couldn't recognize that sounded like a lullaby played backwards. I fumbled for my phone to call 911, but my hands wouldn't stop shaking. The screen kept slipping from my fingers. He picked up a rock from the edge of the parking lot and held it up so I could see it. He lightly pecked at it before he hurled it at my windshield. The cracks started at the corner and spread like a spider web, distorting everything beyond the glass. But it was his laugh that really broke me. Not angry or frustrated, just delighted, like he was a kid who just figured out how to make the perfect paper airplane. He spat on my window, a thick glob that slowly slid down the glass, and then he ran away. Not fast or panicked, just trotting away like he was late for dinner. I sat in that parking lot for minutes, sobbing and shaking, before I could gather enough strength to drive home. The police took my statement, but they said without witnesses or security cameras, there wasn't much they could do. They'd keep an eye out and file a report. That was weeks ago. I haven't been back to that part of town since, but I know he's still out there. I know because sometimes, when I'm walking to my car after work, I hear that humming. And sometimes, when I check my rearview mirror, I swear I see a figure ducking behind the cars.